Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your voicemails, your text messages. Final preseason game happening for the Bulls tonight. A little less than a week off then. Before their first game in Charlotte. Feels like Twilight Zone. Last year they opened up in Charlotte as well under completely different circumstances. But let us know how you feeling after all of these preseason games. Guys, what are you guys excited most to see this season? We'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369, the place to drop voicemails and text messages. Matt, it's good to hear from you again. It's always good to be back together. I know we've been doing separate episodes the last few weeks now, but glad we can get content out there for the Bulls fans, and I'm very excited leading up to this last preseason game. I'm probably going to watch this full game tonight just because I'm curious to see what Atlanta looks like, see if they've improved at all, and see how the Bulls stack up against them as well. But first and foremost, how you doing? What's going on?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to the final preseason action tonight. Sounds like from a tweet we got from Casey Johnson earlier today, Boylan is going to look to play his starting unit for three or four different shifts throughout tonight's game. I thought maybe being the final preseason game, they might kind of shut down all their key guys as we saw them do in that third preseason game against Indiana. But, you know, hey, I think we've enjoyed seeing what we are seeing, especially offensively, from this first unit in these preseason games, particularly the games against New Orleans and Toronto when the offense was looking real good. The ball was moving. They were scoring efficiently. Lots of assists as far as, you know, ratio of assisted baskets and, of course, shooting a lot of threes as well. So hopefully we see some more of that tonight.
I'm with you. Before we get into the starters, which have been named, and also that point guard battle that we were interested in, some breaking news that came across just as we were recording this. I have the official statement sent out by the Bulls. It says Chicago Bulls signed Luol Deng to retire as a Chicago Bull. A formal announcement in the formal statement says the Chicago Bulls announced today the signing of Luol Deng. After signing, Deng made known his intent to retire from the NBA. And just a quick quote from Michael Reinsdorf. It says, "We're very fortunate and humbled that Luol has chosen to retire as a Chicago Bull. He was a role model on and off the court during his 9 years in Chicago, and he gave everything he had to help us win. I want to thank Luol for not only what he accomplished on the court for the team, but also for the leadership he demonstrated through his philanthropic efforts." So very, very cool that Luol Deng has decided to retire as a Chicago Bull. I love this, even though the Bulls at one point in his career tried to kill him. But glad that he is retiring as a Chicago Bull.
Yeah, it's nice. I was kind of hoping that we would get this when Luol did officially decide to hang him up. You know, we saw him reunite with D. Rose and Tibbs last season with Minnesota and Taj too. Played 22 games for Minnesota last season after his stint with the Lakers didn't really go quite as planned. But I mean, 9 of his 15 seasons with the Bulls, I think he will, of course, always be remembered primarily as a Bull when people look back at his NBA career. which included two All-Star nods as a member of the Bulls in 12 and 13. In those two seasons, he also led the NBA in minutes per game. Shout out Tibbs, 39.4 minutes, 38.7 minutes. Also part of the All-Rookie team his rookie year, and a All-Defensive Second Team nod in 2011-2012. A crucial piece to the Bulls team that has gotten closest to title contention since the dynasty ended in 98. Tibbs always referring to him as his glue guy, certainly a vocal and mental and emotional leader of that team, and certainly a big part of a lot of fond Bulls memories from those early 2010s teams that were a lot of fun to watch, and even the baby Bulls teams when he first came in as a part of that draft where the Bulls landed Luol and Ben Gordon in 2004. So congrats to Luol. Happy for him. Great career. And it seems only fitting that he ends it as a one-day contract member of the Bulls.
If I had to ask you, in just by ballparking this, how many categories Luol Deng is in the top 10 in all-time career stats with the Bulls, how many categories roughly would you say?
Ooh, that's a good question. How many categories is he top 10, did you say?
Correct.
I'll say five categories.
He's top 10 for Bulls all-time career leaders in 10 different categories. And that's crazy to think about when
Holy
you think about
shit.
All of the 90s teams and all the great players that have come before Luol Deng. Let me just read this really quick. So he's an all-time career leader as a Bull in seasons played. He's tied for fourth with 10. Games played, sixth with 637 minutes. He's fifth all-time, 22,882. He's fourth in points, which actually to me is a very, very surprising one, at 10,286. Field goals made, he's fifth, 3,987. Field goals attempted, fifth, 8,675. Free throws made, eighth, 1,925. Free throws attempted, eighth, 2,490. Offensive rebounds, he's ninth, 1,109. Defensive rebounds, sixth, 2,969. Total rebounds, ninth, 4,078. He's fifth in steals at 639 and 10th in blocked shots at 360. That is pretty crazy. I would not have guessed 10 categories where he's top 10 all time in Bulls career stats.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is a heck of a lot. And points, you know, field goal attempts certainly is a bit surprising. But I mean, nine seasons and he played, he only played 49 games in the 2008-2009 season because of injury, and 54 in the lockout shortened season in 11-12. But other than that, 61 or more in all of his seasons with the Bulls, including multiple 82-game seasons, 78 here, 75 there. So lots of games, and field goal attempts per game is all 10 or more. His rookie year, 10.6, and then go down the list of his Bulls tenure, 12, 15, 14, 12, 14, 14, 14, 14. I mean, people always kind of thought of more important elements to the Bulls offense, whether it was the baby Bulls years and Ben Gordon doing a bulk of the shooting and scoring, or of course then when Derrick Rose came in and was a prominent scorer, Boozer taking a lot of shots when he was brought in, and then of course as Jimmy Butler sort of became more prominent for the Bulls at the tail end of Luol's Bulls years, he was always kind of thought of as like a third offensive option, but there were a lot of nights when he was the first or second offensive option. People tend to forget that.
It is kind of crazy to think about, and I feel like his career with the Bulls is sort of underrated, and I don't know if necessarily we took it for granted, but we just... He was such a staple in the Bulls lineup too, and just his ability to score. He built like a brick house, like you were saying, played in almost every game, didn't sit out a whole lot with injuries, at least until his back end of his career. But I could probably say half the league. The Bulls do weird things with the retiring the numbers and all of that. But if Luol Deng did this with another team, there's probably half the teams in the league right now that should he have retired, they would retire his number as well. The Bulls aren't going to do that because they still have far many guys to retire their numbers before Deng. But if he was on any other of these small market teams, like maybe a Memphis or say an Oklahoma City, any of these smaller market teams, he would for sure get his number retired, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. As far as the longevity of what he did with the Bulls, 9 seasons, including a couple of All-Star appearances, and just a model of consistency. I agree with you. I don't think that we will see the Bulls retire his number just because that is a very short list. Other than Michael and Scotty, Bob Love and Jerry Sloan, like that's they don't do jersey retirement numbers for you unless you are, an icon, a Hall of Famer, and I don't think the Bulls are going to retire his number. But I did think that, if both parties were open to it, that what they should do was sign him to, an honorary one-day contract so that he could at least retire as a member of the Bulls, because he certainly meant at least that much to this organization, if not more.
I don't know what he has plans for as far as post-career or not, but I would assume if he wants to become an ambassador for the Bulls, he's got a job already, right? And thinking about all of the investments he has around Chicago still, too, that article came out in the summer talking about all the investments and all the money that he made in the real estate market here in Chicago. So I would assume that he maybe is going to continue to keep his roots here. I don't know where he lives right now, but again, going back to what he would want to do in post-career, I think the Bulls would be open to him being in some type of ambassador role or some type of advisor role, and right. I think he'd be really good at that.
Well, and especially when you think about the role of global ambassador, because
true.
Of all of the
very
trips
true.
That Luol Deng makes back to Africa to do all of his various charity work there and promoting the sport of basketball and promoting the NBA in Africa. And, it was even, fun hearing one of his quotes talking about his time with the Bulls and what it meant to him being like a 7-year-old kid growing up, living in Egypt and knowing nothing about basketball in the NBA other than the names Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and the team name Chicago Bulls. Like, that is what the young 7-year-old kid Luol Deng knew about the NBA and basketball, was, that iconic Bulls team of the 90s. So, I think it would be amazing for him and for the organization if in some capacity he is an ambassador and continues the work he's already done and is still doing, promoting the sport and promoting the league over for kids in Africa, and also doing so, as an ambassador for the Bulls, not just the NBA.
With you. So very excited about Luol Deng being a retired Bull, and that's good to see. Before we move on to, we've got a couple other things to do on the show today. Obviously, want to talk about the starters being revealed, also the point guard battle kind of being resolved now with Jim Boylan setting his opening night lineup and as far as his rotations go. So we'll get to that. We'll also get to the NBA's GM surveys, which come out preseason every single year. So we'll talk a little bit about those, the Bulls appearing in multiple different categories, at least with some of those votes. But before we do that, we have a big announcement here on the Locked On Podcast Network. So the NBA show, our national show Locked On NBA, which is 5 times a week, has gotten even stronger, even better than it has already been. One of the biggest announcements that we have made today is John Hollinger, the former Memphis Grizzlies VP of basketball operations and godfather of basketball analytics, will now be hosting a show once a week here on the Locked On Podcast Network, along with Nate Duncan. So if you're a huge analytics guy, you're part of NBA Twitter, you know exactly who Nate Duncan is. Does a fantastic job for The Athletic as well on his podcast on the Dunked On Basketball show. So they're going to be on once a week doing a unique analytics and front office driven show, as well as another one of our national shows, Rejecting the Screen. They're going to be on 2 times a week, one being more of a general NBA talk and the other one being a long form interview with prominent NBA figures. And then also we're going to have the Locked On NBA show as well, once or twice a week with rotating amounts of hosts. So if you love the national perspective of the NBA and you're a Bulls fan and you're also a diehard NBA fan, this is a show you have to subscribe to. So we're very, very excited to have John Hollinger aboard, as well as Nate Duncan once a week. So those shows should be fantastic. So give Locked On NBA a subscribe right now, as well as all of our Chicago shows, Locked On Blackhawks, Locked On Bulls, Locked On Bears, Locked On Cubs, and should have maybe a Locked On White Sox show coming hopefully soon. So we'll have all of the Chicago shows rounded out, but wanted to make mention of that really quick. So very, very excited for all the things that the Locked On Podcast Network is doing to ramp up for the NBA season. Matt, let's turn it over, though, to some of the news that we got this morning. Jim Boylan kind of making his final decision about what the point guard rotation will look like, what the rotations will look like in general. And it's not a surprise, but Thomas Satoransky is going to be a part of that starting five on opening night, and Chris Dunn will be his backup. Your first reaction to this, and I'm assuming it wasn't all that surprising?
No. I mean, we were getting very clear and obvious hints throughout preseason that Jim had made the decision, and that the decision was to go with Satoransky in the starting lineup. And I think that that is the most logical solution. You and I have been talking about it since Satoransky arrived, primarily what his presence in the starting unit could do to help LaVine and Markkanen, you know, blossom and continue to be the offensive focuses of this team. And we saw the first, you know, glimpses of that when Satoransky took the starting spot in their second preseason game and looked pretty darn good and pretty comfortable doing it. You know, we've come a long way from the Bulls basically forgetting publicly that Chris Dunn was on the team when the front office was making comments about their core, and then trying to backtrack and apologize to Chris for, oh, I'm sorry, I should have said Chris's name, you know, Paxson talking to the media, to knowing that they tried to trade him this offseason, not really getting any offers. The one possible talk they had with Memphis involving a potential part three Justin Holiday experience in Chicago folding when they found you know, a point guard elsewhere. And then the Bulls really ramping up the positive Chris Dunn talk at Media Day. He's been such a great team player. He came into the voluntary September workouts with, you know, a clear mind and a refocused, you know, sense of self as far as who he is, what he brings to this team and all that stuff. And so now I think we're at a point where if the Bulls do have a team approaching them that for whatever reason at some point this season needs to add some depth to their point guard position and are interested in Chris Dunn, and the Bulls could get a wing to add to their currently lacking wing depth for Chris Dunn, they absolutely should and probably will pull the trigger on said trade. In the meantime, however, it looks like Jim Boylan has found what he wants to do as his temporary solution, which is pair Chris Dunn and Kobe White together in the backcourt of the second unit. And I think that that, along with starting Satoransky, makes perfect sense too. Because guess what? Kobe White, as we are finding out very quickly, could play off the ball. If not, should play off the ball some.
I'm with you. And I think it's only going to help Kobe White too. And I think, you know, I think we're going to have to wait to kind of evaluate this until we get maybe about 35 games into the season. But this newfound approach from Chris Dunn seems a lot more positive, uplifted, and upbeat than he did just a year ago. And a lot of bad things did happen to Chris Dunn. Unfortunate things, I should say, last year. You know, he first game back, he goes down with a knee injury that sidelines him for 5-6 weeks. He also was dealing with a newborn child too, and also there were some other things that were never really kind of brought up, but I feel like Chris Dunn was struggling with some other stuff off the court. His teammates had kind of made mention of that, and that's why he was struggling last year. But I'm excited to see, and it's, you know, to Jim Boylan's credit too, something that we, you know, you and I talked about a lot last year when Jim Boylan took over, is the fact is, are these guys going to buy into what Jim Boylan is serving them? And last year, for the most part, we didn't think so. Towards the end of the season, I feel like you and I both had an idea that some of the players are, but I think it's kind of a wait and see thing. And I get it, new season brings positivity everywhere, and we'll have to wait until we actually get into game mode. But it seems like Jim Boylan has a lot of these guys buying into what he's serving up, and that's only a good thing for him.
And yeah, I mean, it seems like Jim and Chris have found some common ground here. Chris talking about how he appreciated Jim being straightforward. This is a direct quote from a Casey Johnson piece on NBCSportsChicago.com earlier today. I just appreciate Coach talking to me, being straightforward, and being truthful to me. I'm going to do my job and do what's best for the team. And then Boylan in this same column saying, here's quote Jim Boylan, before I could even get out the words, Chris, I'm going to bring you off the bench to start the season. He had already said, Coach, I'm going to do whatever you need me to do, and I'm ready for what you want me to do. Before I could even get it out, it was a two-minute conversation. I've always said he has great heart for this team. He has always been very coachable. He accepts criticism. He owns his mistakes. His response is all about the team and what we're trying to build. It's role definition and it's role acceptance. His role acceptance is off the charts, end quote. That's Jim Boylan on one Chris Dunn. So I think at this point, you know, is Dunn disappointed that he lost his starting job? Yeah, of course. Everybody in the NBA who's in the NBA wants to be a starter. That's no secret. That's, you know, that's no breaking news. And when he was asked if, you know, he thought he was given a fair shot to keep his starting job upon learning of, you know, the Satoransky addition, Dunn essentially just said, I'm not going to comment on that, and I'm focused on serving my role and what coach is asking me to do in my role moving forward. So it seemed like for a while there at the tail end of last season and into the offseason, Chris Dunn was definitely unhappy. We even heard reports that he requested a trade, and we'll see if he is still on this team by the trade deadline. But at least for now, it seems, they appear to have found some common ground. And for a team that is still going to be challenged defensively this season, having Chris Dunn in that Psyche unit could definitely help.
I'm with you. And I, you know, just hearing what you had said, the quotes from the Casey Johnson piece, getting it from Dunn. The one that I really appreciated too was, it just says, I just appreciate Coach Jim Boylan talking to me and being straightforward and being truthful to me. He said, I'm going to do my job and do what's best for the team. So I don't know if this is Chris Dunn knowing that he's in a contract year, and, you know, part of that can play into this, but also too, just kind of revitalizing himself and knowing that if he wants to stay in the league for another 5 to 7 years and be a part of this team going forward, the best thing to do is just play your role on the team. And I think that's only going to help him build his confidence back up. And also too, he said his most important focus right now is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. And I think that's important. If he can focus on his best strength, which we knew was defense coming in, I think it's going to let other things play out as well. And I think this for Chris Dunn too, coming off the bench, he's going to have some other weapons too to be able to dish out to. He doesn't feel like he always needs to go on the offensive side of the ball and feel like he's got to chuck up a shot. So now he'll have Coby White. He'll have Thaddeus Young coming off the bench. He'll have guys in the big man rotation, whether it's Cornette or if it's Gafford, down low to dish to. So I think things are going to go well for Chris Dunn, and it's a win-win for the Bulls too. Chris Dunn plays well. Thomas Satoransky plays well in the starting unit. Everybody seems to be singing Kumbaya for right now. I think this is only a win-win for the Bulls. I think this is best case scenario, right, coming into at least opening night.
I think so. I mean, if it is as, you know, happy and everybody's on the same page as they are making it out to be, then yeah, it's a win-win for everybody. Because I think most people believe that Satoransky should start. And if Chris Dunn is not going to be traded, if the Bulls can't find a trade to deal with that logjam at the point guard position, then you hope that Dunn is in a place mentally where he can accept the role that he is being tasked to serve. And that is absolutely a defense-first player. And I don't know what, if anything, we will see as far as the development of Chris Dunn's game offensively this season, but most often, whether it was last season or in these preseason games, when he's trying to be a, you know, point guard that's creating on the offensive end, he looks like a guy who's trying to do too much. And then you get the turnovers, and then you can let that affect your play on the defensive end. If Chris Dunn is frustrated with his offense, then maybe the defense isn't there. Right now, especially considering some of the other pieces that second unit has, as you were alluding to, with what Coby White can give you offensively, Thad Young, Luke Kornet, all of these pieces that they have off their bench, if Denzel Valentine is healthy, they have pieces on their bench that can score. And if Chris Dunn is going to be the leader of that second unit, that's great, and that's fine. But being a leader of that second unit for Chris Dunn will be primarily leading them on the defensive end.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's the Bulls are going to need that in that second unit too, especially with Coby White playing once Chandler Hutchison gets healthy, as I would assume is going to be a part of that rotation as well. So him on top of Denzel Valentine are going to have to be two guys in that second unit that are going to be leaders, because I would imagine Thaddeus Young is going to spend a lot of time with most of the starters too, kind of being interchanged with Lauri Markkanen. So we're going to see him, I would imagine, more with the starters than we would with the second unit. But just being able to be sort of that leader mentor for some of these other younger guys that they're going to be playing around, especially if Gafford gets some time. Luke Kornet's still mildly young in this league. I think this is what, his third season in the league. So you're going to get some younger guys in that second unit. So they're going to need Chris Dunn to step up, as well as Denzel Valentine and some of these other guys, to be have a successful second unit. And that was the biggest knock to the Bulls last year. We literally had maybe six guys that we could trust on a nightly basis to go out there and play competent basketball. And then after that, it was a crapshoot. So I'm excited to see what Chris Dunn does this season. I think a lot of people that were just ready to cast him off, I think he's going to be able to prove those guys wrong. But game speaks everything. The one thing that I wanted to talk about real quick with Thomas Satoransky as we kind of transition to the GM surveys is Thomas Satoransky was voted as number five most underrated player acquisition this offseason with 7% of the vote from all of the GMs. I bring this up first because I was looking at the numbers with Bradley Beal and Thomas Satoransky last year. Their on-off court numbers and also some of their advanced analytics. And they were pretty good, man. Like, this is makes me even more excited. I don't know why I didn't think about this until just recently, but seeing what Thomas Satoransky was able to do with an all-star caliber player like Bradley Beal. So I think this is only going to enhance and help Zach LaVine this year. And it's nice to see that Satoransky is inserted into that starting lineup. He's comfortable and knows how to play with Otto Porter as well, so it's somebody he doesn't have to really get used to playing with. And Satoransky too, to me, I feel like is a pass first type of point guard, and which is only going to again help Zach LaVine and feel more comfortable with this starting unit. But the numbers are really, really good with Bradley Beal and Thomas Satoransky last year. Their true shooting percentage was nearly at 60%, 57.1. Their assist to turnover ratio was a positive 2.0. So all of these numbers, offensive rating was a 113, defensive rating was a 110. So it's good to see that those two players played really well on the floor together. I'm hoping it can translate with Zach LaVine. But we're just surprised to see Thomas Satoransky's name listed as one of the most underrated acquisitions out of all of the chaos that happened throughout the offseason.
I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised to see him on the list. I wasn't expecting him to be at the top of the list by any means. But, I mean, certainly somebody who should have received some votes, because I think when you talk about players who were added to a team, whether a trade, a free agency signing, a sign and trade like Satoransky's case, that are going to make a significant positive impact on the team compared to their roster and their lineups from the season prior. You know, some of the underrated kind of guys are not obviously like the juggernaut. It's not like you're going to say that the Nets adding Kyrie is an underrated addition. It's going to be more role players than star caliber players. But of the role player tier, you know, it's a short list of people who I think were better signings than the Bulls signing Satoransky, because of some of the, you know, just what you were touching on with the analytics of him and Beal working together. And it's something that we've already heard about from Satoransky and from also Jim Boylan in some of their initial conversations when they were going through their courting, that Sato is very much a student of the game and does things like, as you know, he made the decision to come play with the Bulls, he was spending the early parts of his offseason watching tape of Zach LaVine and watching tape of Lauri Markkanen and saying and same thing, but already what was more familiar with as a former teammate, Otto Porter Jr., and saying, okay, where are these players' favorite spots on the court? Where do they like to receive the ball? When I send them a pass, where, you know, high, low, left, right, where do they like that pass to be? And all of the things that go into making him an elite teammate who makes his teammates better. And that's been a consistent knock on this random hodgepodge of young talent the Bulls are trying to rebuild with through the first couple of years of this rebuild post-Jimmy, is that they don't have anybody on their roster that makes the teammates around them better. That's exactly what Satoransky does, and that's why he gets votes in that category.
Yeah, just looking around the other categories at Bulls players or the Bulls just in general got votes for. We'll start with the team as a whole. Not too big of a surprise. Bulls came in tied for fourth in the question of who will be the most improved team this year. They were tied with Atlanta, the Brooklyn Nets. It was the Bulls, Brooklyn Nets, Bulls, and Pelicans. I was surprised to see the Pelicans up there. Like, I get it, they have the younger players, but isn't it kind of strange that you're thinking about a most improved team that just traded away one of the top five players in the league last year in Anthony Davis? I just find that a little bizarre to me. And look, the Pelicans are going to be fun to watch this year. We just saw them in preseason not too long ago, about a week ago. But still, not very surprised about the Hawks, the Nets, but was a little bit shocked about the Pelicans. I think people are higher on the Pelicans than I am this year, especially where their win total is over under, sitting at 39.5. I would shoot way under on that. I think that they're going to have some struggles with those rookies and some of the younger players trying to find chemistry together. But that's neither here nor there. Were you surprised to see where the Bulls were at 7% at number four? Do you think that's about right?
I think it's about right. And, you know, obviously with the Lakers getting AD, they come in first. Dallas, you know, adding Kristaps to their already fascinating young core that involves, of course, the reigning ROI Luka. Clippers getting Kawhi and Paul George. Honestly, if I was surprised by anything, I was surprised that the Clippers are third on this list and not first, ahead of the Lakers and the Mavs. Because adding Kawhi and adding Paul George to me is better than adding AD. And I know that the Lakers did add a couple of other, you know, secondary pieces in addition to AD, but I still think Kawhi and Paul should have the Clippers first on that list. And then, you know, the Hawks, they just had a great draft night, adding what, like three of the top 10 picks or three of the top 12 picks or whatever it was. And who could forget their biggest offseason addition, good old Jabari Parker. we'll see how that works out for them. Brooklyn, of course, getting votes for the additions of KD and Kyrie, even though KD will be on the shelf for at least the several months of the season, the first several months of the season. Pelicans, I don't know. I think I disagree with you a little bit there. Chemistry with all those young pieces certainly could be an issue, but man, did they add a lot of talent. Yes, they lost Anthony Davis, but they knew they were going to lose Anthony Davis. And some of the other pieces that they've added, whether it was their drafts, which I think they did a pretty good job with, or Lonzo. Ingram didn't look great in the Bulls-Pelicans game in the preseason. I'm not super high on Ingram. He looked pretty bad. But, I mean, you know who didn't look bad? You know who looked downright unstoppable? Zion fucking Williamson. Like, I know it's just preseason, but everyone's saying, oh, I don't know if his skills are going to translate to the NBA level. The dude poured in 29 points on 12 of 13 from the field against us and has looked just as dominant and athletic in all of his other preseason appearances. And then, you know, some underrated veteran signings in addition to all these young kids, including J.J. Redick, who I think is going to be a really nice piece for them as well. And the fact that the Knicks got any votes on this list is hilarious. How did the Knicks get better? How, no offense to our pals Bobby and Taj, but how did the Knicks get votes for most improved team?
It's a joke. Like, I get, like, R.J. Barrett. They got R.J. Barrett, and Mitchell Robinson looks like he's going to be a pretty solid player. Alonzo Trier was a good pick last year for them, too. But outside of any of those guys, like you said, they added, what, like 12 power forwards in the offseason, so I don't know. I have no idea how they got votes. The last one I wanted to touch on really fast, like, obviously, there's a couple ones that we don't need to discuss. Like, one of them was like most athletic player, and Zach LaVine was in the top five. That's pretty much a no-brainer. But the one that I was curious how fans would react to is which team has the most promising young core. Number one came in at the New Orleans Pelicans at 28%. Denver Nuggets were number two at 24%. Atlanta Hawks at number three at 17%. Kings 4, 10%. 76ers 7%. Also receiving votes were the Celtics, the Bulls, the Mavericks, and the Grizzlies. Were you surprised that the Bulls weren't higher up on this list? Do you think fans are going to be a little irritated that they're not as high up on this list? I think that the Bulls have to prove something before they can be higher up as far as most promising young core goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's any category that would upset Bulls fans, it would be this one, that they weren't higher up. And I think it also has to depend on people's different definitions of a young core. a promising young core. Because a team like Philly getting votes in this category, to me, is a little misleading. Are we still classifying the Sixers as a young core? I know that Simmons and Embiid, who are, of course, the two main pieces, are still fairly young. But the other pieces of that established team are established veterans. You know, they have Tobias Harris. They added Al Horford in the offseason. So for them to have 7% of the vote, which was more than the number of votes that the Bulls got, to me, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And you could make the same kind of argument for the Denver Nuggets. Like, yeah, some of their pieces are young, but it's like, you know, what I'm trying to say is, like, you could be upset as a Bulls fan that they didn't have a higher spot on this list, but it depends on what you mean by a young core. Because some of the teams on this list were playoff teams from last year. Playoff teams that made deep runs, Philly and Denver among them. Also receiving votes, Boston Celtics, another playoff team from last year. Like, you know, it's a weird category to me.
It is. It's good to get the votes, though. Like, because, again, like I was saying, the Bulls haven't proved all that much in the first 2 years of the rebuild. Like, we've seen some nice things here and there, but for the most part, what we were talking about all last year was how everybody made a national joke of the Bulls. So it's at least good. On paper, I think the Bulls have a really promising young core. It's about taking that next step and proving it on the floor, and I think this is going to be a vital year to not only prove people around the national media who maybe had some doubts about what this core was going to be or the selections that the Bulls made, but it seems like the spin on the Bulls, especially from NBA Twitter and also just some of the national talking shows, talking about the Bulls more in a positive light than I think they have over the last like 5 years. So I think that is ultimately going to push the Bulls, I think, to the next level, as they need to prove it on the floor. And that pretty much goes without saying. But just because the Sacramento Kings are on this list, Matt, I wanted to make one last point before we get out of here. Did you hear what Buddy Hield had to say last night?
No, I missed it.
Buddy Hield pretty much told Sacramento, you have till Monday to pay me or I'm gone.
Oh, yeah. I did see that. Yes.
Oh, man, dude. Talk about player empowerment now. It's like dudes who are coming off their first contract are already asking for max level money. And I don't disagree with Buddy Hield. Look, again, love his story. He came from absolutely nothing, and he wants to get the most money he can out of this. More power to him. I just think that the Sacramento Kings are in a hilarious spot where they're going to have to probably overspend on Buddy Hield in order to keep him happy and to keep him long-term. If they mess this up, this will be the worst move for them since they traded DeMarcus Cousins. I find it strange that this is the timing Buddy Hield's giving right before the start of the season. But if he ends up being a guy that needs to be moved, I'm curious where he'd go and how much teams would really be willing to offer him on the open market. I just found his comments to be very frank, very very straight up, and just saying, "Hey, I'm trying to get paid here. This is what we play in the NBA for, is to make money." So more power to him. But I just thought that was hilarious. It happened to the Kings.
I mean, certainly shoot your shot if you're Buddy Hield. I'm not going to blame the guy. But if I'm Sacramento, am I really trying to pay him the max or something close to it? I mean, yes, he's coming off a season where he averaged 20.7 points per game and played all 82 games. Shot 45.8 from the field, shot 42.7 from downtown on nearly 8 attempts a game. That's some pretty efficient stuff. Adding 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game. It's a useful player. But it was just his third season in the league, and oh, by the way, he's about to turn 27. He's like one of the oldest young players in the league when you're talking about actually experience versus age. The guy has 3 seasons under his belt, and he's about to be 27 years old. And yeah, he can be a 20 points per game scorer on a bad team in Sacramento, but is that worth max money?
It's crazy. It's crazy, too.
Yikes.
Because the Kings being a smaller market team, and it's like, what big free agent's going to go play in Sacramento? And the fact, too, that they just restructured Harrison Barnes' deal as well and gave him way more money than he should have made. That money could have been allocated to Buddy Hield this season. I find it pretty funny. And like you said, like for being that old, and look, he shot nearly 8 attempts from 3 a game and shot 42.7%. That's no joke. That'll get you paid in some respects. He's also a really good defender too. So I don't think the Kings are going to have any choice but to overpay, and pretty much they're at the hands of Buddy Hield, because who else are they going to get to replace him, right? No free agents are coming to Sacramento. So if they want to keep this young core together with Fox and Hield and Bagley and Giles, like all of these guys are going to have to be signed and kept together, and I think they're going to have no choice but to pay Buddy Hield. What I just find weird is, even if he doesn't get the money he's looking for and still re-signs, how does that make everybody else on that team feel? And I don't know necessarily what those guys are thinking as well, but if he doesn't get the money that he wants and he's still kind of upset, I don't know how long term that fits. And we'll see what happens with Buddy Hield, but I just found his quotes to be awesome. Like I want to hear more players like that. If you have something and you want to speak your mind, speak your mind. And Buddy Hield certainly did that. I hope it works out for him.
Yeah, but I mean, if you are the Kings and you want to, I mean, you know, they still have him under his rookie deal for a little while longer than they have Buddy. But who's a higher priority to keep and keep on a max deal, Buddy Hield or De'Aaron Fox? One of them's 5 years younger and is looking like a true elite modern NBA offense kind of point guard with lightning quick speed and a variety of weapons in his offensive tool bag. Coming off of 17 and 7 assists per game. Who's 21 and not 27.
I'll take a De'Aaron Fox every day of the week. And he's a restricted free agent. You know, they can offer him the qualifying offer, which I would assume De'Aaron Fox, after the 2020-2021 season, is going to deny if he continues to play the way he does. But yeah, you're right. I don't know. It's going to be weird for the Kings. They have a lot of players coming up in the next year that they're going to have to make decisions on. And they just paid Harrison Barnes all of that money. So it'll be interesting for them. But I loved those comments from him. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks so much for listening to us. Again, you can hit us up with your thoughts. If you have any reaction to Jim Boylan finally setting his point guards for the season as starters, at least. We know what the starting rotation is going to be a week from today, opening up in Charlotte. So give us your thoughts. 331-979-1369. You can hit us up on Twitter as well, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. I want to make a mention again. All of our Chicago shows on the Locked On Podcast Network are fantastic. They do great work. Locked On Blackhawks just had Stanley Cup champion. Today's episode, Stanley Cup champion Dave Boland on the show. So Jay Zawoski doing a great job just joining the network not too long ago. So if you're a Blackhawks fan, you're a Chicago sports fan, go check out Locked On Blackhawks as well as Locked On Cubs and Locked On Bears for all of your daily scoops on Chicago sports. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I thought it was a real positive.
You know, it's the playoffs. When I think about playoffs, my nipples get hurt. I'm sorry.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com